Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Ramirez got a hustle. That double clutch will cost him. And Luis Robert trips down first, and you hope he's all right. Oh, my goodness. Luis Robert takes a spill down the first base line.
He does not appear to be okay, and I hope it is not a groin pull.
Luis Robert, that looked like that could be a very, very long, serious injury. He's such a good player. He's coming around so much, and he's ready to bust out. And, you know, you look at the size of that leg and those hips. I mean, he's a big, tall drink of water, and he was running down the line to beat out an infield single, and all of a sudden his right leg no longer worked. They said it was a hip flexor strain, and the x-rays were negative. When in the postgame, it's one of these like, oh, thank God that it wasn't more serious. We'll see how serious it is, but he's definitely on the injured list. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Awful.
There's very little that we know. Oh. And hip flexors range from anywhere between 1 and 8 weeks, right? In terms of missing time and recovery time. And it just depends on how severe it is and how quick of a healer the athlete is, but yep. That's a very delicate injury, and you feel bad for him, you feel bad for the White Sox, because if there's been one thing that's been unfortunately consistent this season so far, they've had to deal with injuries, and they've had way too many of them already.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall, taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh my God, the awful news for the White Sox. Just a really, really bummer of a news conference. Luis Robert with a grade 3 strain of his hip flexor. That means a complete tear. And David, that is the worst case scenario. Let me tell you, it looked so awful when it happened that you knew it was going to be a long-term thing. And the idea that, well, 12 to 16 weeks is the only positive, that it's more likely that there could be surgery, there could be no more season. Just about as sad and depressing a piece of news as any Sox fans going to hear this season, David.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, happy Tuesday. Not a very happy development for the Sox. I think your worst fears were confirmed. You saw the agony on Luis Robert's face on Sunday, and you just knew it was going to be something this bad, or you feared and maybe hoped that it wouldn't be, but you know it's bad when they basically are saying it's the same timetable, whether or not you have surgery or not. So you understand the degree to which this has been damaged, the hip flexor, and it's a very delicate injury, difficult to return from. You know, that's, I think, you know, optimistically, I think when they talk about in terms of weeks, 12 to 16 weeks is still 3 to 4 months. And when you do the math and you look at the calendar, it's just unfortunate, because how often does it happen to a team with high expectations to lose not only one big cog in your lineup, but two in the course of about a month? And yeah, tough day yesterday for the White Sox organization and certainly its fans.
I got to tell you, I'm talking to a buddy of mine who's a football guy, and he's like, oh, you know, so 16 weeks on the outside. And I'm like, well, they don't know. It could be season ending. And he says, could it be career-ending? Is that the Bo Jackson injury? And I was like, what? What are you talking about? Bo Jackson got hit in a football game and his hip dislocated, and supposedly as he kind of popped his hip back in, he severed arteries. I just went, look, I mean, it was like the last thing anybody should say to me at that point.
Yeah, you did not want to trigger you yesterday with that. Can be considered the worst case scenario. And if Luis Robert covered wide receivers for a living, as it looks like he's capable of doing, you might wonder about that. I can see the football guy mentality, Mully. If you have a guy who's an explosive athlete in football and you have a hip flexor injury like this, then you would worry about will he ever regain that sort of, you know, athleticism. Baseball, a little different. Let's hope. And I think that, you know, let's not get there yet, because you just have to get him a prognosis, a diagnosis that's a little bit more clear cut, and we'll see. Just it's tough to imagine and envision this year being a realistic timetable just because of how severe this seems. So, yeah, they've got to try to find a way to pick up the pieces and move on, but that's easier said than done.
And, obviously Adam Engel is ready to go. Oh, no, wait.
No.
He had a setback. How about that news? So Adam Engel, you saw him, hitting. Oh, Adam Engel's okay? You know, he had a wrap around his hammy when he was in the batting cage. No, he had a setback. We're starting from scratch with him. 3 weeks away from a rehab assignment. I mean, what? That set me off, let me tell you, because you need that guy back.
And you were raw, let's face it. I mean,
was raw. I had just been hearing news about the bloody
bow injury. You hear about Luis Robert, and then you hear this about Adam Engel, and you want to pop. I get it, because how bad can it get? Adam Engel, you feel bad for him because he came into this spring as a player who had done a lot to get to the point where he was going to be an offensive threat. He was going to be somebody that fit in very nicely in that outfield. And then 3 more weeks, Mully. So we're talking about the end of May. So May's wiped out for Adam Engel, the first 2 months of the season. That was supposed to be a big one for him. They've got to do something. They've got to look at some very creative options, perhaps. It's now it looks like, boy, that Adam Eaton deal more valuable by the inning.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to give him a day off a week.
I know.
Don't you? You can't
at some point
just keep rolling him out there. He's all beaten and battered, and I mean, goodness
gracious.
Shoving
people. I mean, he's had a tough start already.
Yeah,
he's done a lot, But this is what's hard to rationalize or look at, because the Sox have had losses to Aloy and Luis Robert that even the best teams, and the Sox are one of the best teams, very difficult to figure out, all right, are your expectations still intact? Still have their pitching. You still have their bullpen. You're not the same team offensively. You're not the same team defensively. But it's tough to know what direction to head, except for, you just got to have to get through this short phase. I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough one.
Wow. It's really difficult. I mean, it's just so such a bummer. The Cubs-Dodgers postponed due to the weather. So today there'll be a day-night doubleheader at Wrigley. Game one is the Kyle Hendricks game, and that will be a 12:45 pregame here on the Score, a 1:20 first pitch. And game two, first pitch is 6:40. And, of course, both games will be here on the Score. So it'll be good to get the Cubs up and running, because I needed that game yesterday just as a distraction from all of the other things. And, unfortunately, I was left watching the Blackhawks and the Bulls. Goodness gracious, that wasn't happy news either, huh?
No, it was a tough day. The only person in Chicago sports had a tougher day than fans watching these teams, struggle with injuries. And then last night with the Bulls and the Hawks, I mean, made Chuck Leno look like he had a good day. But, he got some bad news as well earlier, obviously getting his release from the Bears. Tough news for Chuck Leno, but was stuff we thought might happen after the draft and given their salary cap realities.
Yeah, we did. I mean, take no pride in it, but I think we both figured something had to happen, and that was one of the more logical ideas. Now, unfortunately, you're left without a guy who's played a snap at left tackle. I mean, I don't know if that matters in the NFL. If I'm a certain defensive coach up in Minnesota, I'm probably looking at the Bears thinking, oh, which side to attack? How do I go about it? I'm spoiled for choice as to how I want to attack them. So we'll see what they end up doing. There are other options out there, and we can talk about them as we move forward. But, David, am I wrong? Did you hear Ryan Pace at one point take a moment during his little post-draft strut to say that Joey Lane has done? He took a minute to talk about how great Joey Lane has
had
done
been with
as
him
a
for
20 cap
years.
Guy.
Yeah, been with him for 20 years. Praise him. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask something. Okay. If he's done such a good job as a cap guy, why are you cutting Kyle Fuller because he's making $20 million this year? Why are you cutting Chuck Leno because you don't have any space under the salary cap? I'm not saying that that's Joey Lane's fault, but I'm wondering, that didn't happen under Cliff Stein where they were constantly cutting guys. Is that the general manager signing players to bad contracts? Or is that the cap guy dipping into the well too often? I mean, why go out of your way to compliment the guy because you know you're going to cut someone? Is that it?
Well, no, I think you're in the moment. That's a fair criticism, I think, because of the moves the Bears have had to make this offseason that don't make them better. I mean, I think the Fuller one is a little bit more difficult to accept and to, I think, move on from than Charles Leno Jr. But I think in that moment he was celebrating the moves that were made and able to move up with this draft class and put themselves in a position. I'm not going to defend the praise. I think that most general managers are going to do that in that context. But the Bears have had to deal with some real uncomfortable decisions this year that they and problems they created for themselves. I think that's fair. The thing you have to ask with Charles Leno Jr., who I don't think was great, Molly. I don't want to overstate his significance, and I don't think you are either. But you do look at the payroll. Jimmy Graham's still on it, and I find that a little bit interesting. Is that you do have a roster without a left tackle who has taken a snap there, and you have, you know, a backup tight end or a starting tight end or a weapon at tight end that you have. Basically is a specialist at a very high dollar amount. It does raise an eyebrow.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think when I look at the Bears, there's a couple of problems. How did you get to a point where your wide receiver is on a franchise tag because you couldn't get a contract extension with him, which caused you to have to pay that much money this year to keep the guy? I mean, you could really get upset about some of the contract stuff that's happened if you wanted to. And again, I'm not blaming Joey Lane. I just thought it was weird at the time that he complimented him, and then the next day you got another cap cut because you didn't have enough cap cuts because you got some bad contracts. He's not the one who comes up with the contracts. He's negotiating them, but Ryan Pace is the guy that has to have Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham, you know, his specialty is pretty important, which is catching touchdown passes. But the fact that you're keeping him, does that mean that the tight end you drafted with your first pick last year can't catch touchdown passes? I just think that it's interesting to see the places where they're willing to pay and the places they're not willing to pay. And didn't they go after Trent? Was it Trent Williams earlier in free agency? It was the kid from Washington. Didn't they?
San Francisco, yeah. Mm-hmm.
San Francisco, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Didn't they try to make a run at a left tackle and then wound up without a left tackle, and now here you are? I guess that answers the question about Tevin Jenkins, right? They believe he's left tackle. That's a pretty big role to put a guy into that you just drafted, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, that's – but we talked yesterday about how they envisioned him, and you look at the way that they aggressively moved up in the draft, 13 spots. Yeah, you know, you might do that if you got a guy who you think is a mauler at right tackle and is going to be a fixture at the position for years to come. You're more likely to do that if you envision him on the left side, because the two most difficult spots to fill for any team that is trying to reinvent itself offensively or rebuild on the fly offensively are quarterback and left tackle. And those are the two spots that Bears, you know, certainly quarterback, that was well documented. Charles Leno Jr. has been serviceable at the position for a lot of years, 7 years. But I don't think that they have been above average at that position for a long time. So that they think that the rookie can do it, we'll see. I think they need depth. That's what they need, to go out and get a veteran. There's some out there that they could get as far as swing guys. But, yeah, and I definitely the salary cap questions are good ones. They're valid because you didn't even mention that there was a lot of unnecessary controversy when you tell Akeem Hicks, go out and seek a trade. Oh, can't find one? Fine. Come on back. All's forgiven, not forgotten. But it's kind of been an awkward phase for this offseason for the Bears' salary cap issues.
Yeah, it's fascinating to keep an eye on it. And you know, I mean, what's really fascinating is to watch the quarterback go around the NFC North. It's hysterical, really. The Aaron Rodgers thing keeps growing. It turns out Minnesota, who drafted a quarterback in the third round, was looking for Justin Fields in the first round and thought they might be able to land him, and they were going to take him. I wonder how Kirk Cousins is feeling these days. But, boy, has he made a lot of money in his career. And then, meanwhile, in Detroit, I mean, we never talk about Jared Goff. He was just a throw-in. Is he happy? Has he picked out a nice home somewhere in the beautiful Detroit suburbs?
I love the Minnesota development, finding out from CBS Sports story that they're getting ready to move up to draft Justin Fields, and the Bears beat them to it, and there was an element of surprise in their front office when that happened. And now Kirk Cousins, knowing that, finding that out, and they drafted a quarterback anyway, and Kellen Mond, to kind of be the heir apparent in Minnesota. Yep. You wonder if Kirk Cousins is upset enough to try to want to go out and host a game show. I mean, that's how upset he may be.
Well, I mean, he's running out of time, isn't he? Is he not heading into the final year? I mean, if I'm Kirk Cousins, I've won at life, okay? I don't know that I've won on the football field, but my God, I laughed when I saw Robert Griffin III criticize him, because you want to talk about a green-eyed monster. How jealous would you be of a guy that made all that money when he was playing behind you to start? I mean, the guy got franchised twice in Washington, got like an $84 million deal to go to the Vikings. He's just collected his whole life. I mean, it's extraordinary what kind of coin he's made in the NFL, as opposed to the guy that was the big draft pick who's still bouncing around.
RG3's got a Heisman. He's got, all the things that come with that forever. He's got a football legacy. And he looks at Kirk Cousins and says, wow, this guy beat me out.
I don't have his bank account.
Exactly. His guaranteed contract. You wonder how that all happens. And he was, what, a fourth-round draft pick? So Cousins,
incredible,
very well for himself.
Yeah. All right. We got to get into all of it. There's so much to talk about. We've got our executive producer, Dustin Rhodes, joining us. We'll get to the 5 and 5 next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Is the Luis Robert injury complete tear of the right hip flexor. Really a 12 to 16 week injury, or do you suspect he'll miss the year? Why can't we have nice things? Is it time to shop, or maybe Ronaldo to the Cubs for Chris Bryant?
Wow, that would be a heck of a deal if you could pull that off. Ronaldo, didn't he have some surgery as well?
Corrective cornea surgery.
But he's still out for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
At least he'll be able to see what he's doing now. You think that was the problem? Could have been. Strike zone? Yeah, I mean, I hope so.
Usually it's surgery you reserve for an umpire or expect to have from an umpire. Pitcher.
You know, will we be calling for that, David, when we get to the computerized umpire? Get the corneries fixed on that machine. Listen, I am so depressed about Louis Robert. I can't put this anywhere. I mean, if it's a month and a half, I don't know how I feel about anything. I love watching that guy in the outfield. I love watching that guy in the outfield as much as I love watching him at the plate. And he's getting better, and he's learning to hit off-speed pitches, and he's really had a turnaround season in terms of what he's doing at the plate. He just looks like he's getting better every time you see him. But there's nothing like watching him run around center field and cover pretty much, you know, three-quarters of the earth. It is just the worst possible news that it's a complete tear of the hip flexor. They said they're going to contemplate surgery. I mean, oh my God, this is awful. So what are you going to do? Are you going to go get the surgery, or are you going to wait for a month and then think maybe he's coming back? This guy is an MVP candidate, right? Aloy is like a guy. I don't know that he was an MVP candidate, but he's like the best power hitter on the team. So you lose those two guys, and you're not the same team. I mean, you still have really good players. Tim Anderson, Abreu, these are MVP type players, but you're a different team. You've lost, what did Stoney say in his tweet, 65 homers up to, 50 to 65 home runs with these two guys. So obviously you got to play different at the bottom part of the lineup, and you got to roll it over and some of the things that they were managing to do. I am beyond, we can't have nice things. It's that simple. I don't think Chris Bryant is the answer for the White Sox problems. I know people immediately mention that because, you know, he's a great player. He's having an MVP season himself. But I wonder what the cost would be on some move like that. And, you know, I think when you're operating out of a position of vulnerability, and that's what the White Sox are doing, you're paying full freight. And you know, whatever you have in the minor leagues. You know what I did yesterday? I was scouring through the minor league names. I swear to God.
I'm not laughing.
Where the hell is Cespedes? Where did he end up?
I don't know. Was he in Schaumburg?
I couldn't find him on
IKEA?
Any of the list. Let's go. Get him out there. Come on now.
It's understandable because how much worse can this get? And when you talk about how they're framing the injury recovery time, you know, when they talk in terms of weeks, as I said, it seems like they're trying to lessen the blow. This is a blow, and it doesn't look like a guy as explosive as Louis Robert is going to be able to come back from something like this and be the same player this year, which is unfortunate for everybody. You could make the argument, you know, it's a debate nobody wants to have on the South Side, but Louis Robert being missed and out of the lineup is a more of a damaging blow than Eloy Jimenez, because Eloy was going to hit you 40 home runs and be a presence in the middle of that order. Luis Robert made you different. I mean, he was the guy in the outfield that covered up a lot of mistakes. He was the speed guy. He was starting to get it, play a little bit more, and you saw that progress almost on a series-to-series basis so far. So this one is going to hurt, and it changes their focus, and how do they replace him? I think they need to take just a couple weeks to get through this, the sort of the trauma of the shock of letting it set in, and figure out what you're going to do and how you're going to pursue outside options. Okay, maybe you don't want to overreact too quickly because you might make a bad decision, Molly. I think you got to be careful because you still have a very good team. Yes, I don't know if you can say that you're going to be talking World Series still, but you still have a very good team. because of your starting pitching and because of your bullpen. It's a different team, and your expectations are rooted in different things, but you have to get through this initial phase and then reevaluate where you're headed, what do you need, where's Adam Engel, do you try Adam Eaton in center field where he has played as often as he has in right field, do you try other creative options, and then figure out a course of action. But you just have to get this little painful phase right now, and you're going to do it because you still have a lot of starting pitching and you still have a great bullpen in theory, and those guys are, you can trust them. And the Chris Bryant stuff we'll talk about later, because that will be something that is worth considering, just because, you know what, I don't know if you noticed last night before the rainout, but he was penciled in at center field.
All right, there are so many different avenues, but I'm just going to piggyback off of what David just mentioned there. If we're going to talk about Chris Bryant, and Mully mentioned it too, if we're going to talk about Chris Bryant taking the L and going south, Cease and Vaughn is where we start the conversation. Okay, Cease and Vaughn, they come north, Bryant goes south. We can just let that sit, and everybody can weigh in on that any way they would like to. It's a bad enough news story on its own, but then when you combine it with what happened in spring training and then Engel's out, and it's the avalanche of injuries, and that's really it stinks. Listen, the 30-year-old me would have been clicking my heels over the White Sox having an injury like this. As you grow up and you get a little more right-minded, you realize this is nothing to celebrate, Cubs fans. This stinks. He's a really good player. He's a lot of fun to watch. The Sox are really competitive. And I think you guys both said it. We need to see how this goes. They've got a big – listen – split the games with the Reds. It'd be nice to sweep the Reds. Fine, whatever. Split the games with the Reds. But let's see how things go down in Kansas City. Kansas City's on top of this division. The Sox are the team that is supposed to win the division. The Twins have started out poorly. This is a chance for the White Sox to say, you know what? Let's plant the flag, and we're the best team in the division. Now, as far as whether or not Robert comes back, I think a couple things are in play here. How are the Sox 12 weeks from now? How are the Sox 16 weeks from now, if that's the case? If they're doing well, there's really no reason to bring him back unless it was maybe to have him bat in the postseason. Because you've got, Mully, how long do they got this guy under control for? Quite a while, right? Like 2025 or something at least. I didn't look it up. I should have looked it up. But you don't want to ruin this guy by rushing him back. This is a big window. They've got a lot of bats under control down on the south side, and I would hate to see him rushed back for glory right this second.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Do you agree with Ozzie Guillen that Michael Kopech has been the team MVP up to this point? Who would you designate early MVP, if not Kopech?
Love Ozzy. I love Ozzy. And you know how much I appreciate Michael Kopech. I think he's got the most electric arm on the White Sox roster, if not one of the best in the American League. And he has been so valuable. And it's been such a surprise. And there's nobody who I would rather watch pitch in a White Sox uniform, just because of the obvious reasons. But I don't know that I would designate him the MVP for the first month of the season. I think that's difficult to do when you've got a designated hitter hitting .415 with 5 homers and 16 runs batted in with 34 hits in 27 games. Your mean Mercedes is a pretty valuable dude in the first month of the season. But I also think that who saw Carlos Rodon coming? 4-0, the only one any better in the American League, Gerrit Cole. I suppose, but you could have made the argument that Carlos Rodon was your pitcher of the month, and he has been a revelation. He has been a surprise, and he's got a microscopic ERA. So I think probably Rodon would be the most surprising and maybe most valuable because of what he's been able to do every fifth day for a team that's needed that kind of stability. And then maybe Mercedes, because that's, again, those are guys that are surprises. Maybe Kopech you thought would be capable of this if healthy. He's been healthy, and he's been dominant. So what a great conversation to have, because it reminds you that there has been some good news for the White Sox in the first month.
first month of the season is either Carlos Rodon or Yermin Mercedes. I mean, it's just that simple. Yermin came out of nowhere and helped replace the loss of Aloy, and Carlos Rodon has been the best pitcher on the staff. There's not a shadow of a doubt. Has a no-hitter, has been dominant every time out. I love watching Kopech. I think Kopech is a great player. I'm very excited about the future with him. I was reading Jim Margulis this morning at Sox Machine, and he mentioned that that a couple weeks ago, Dan Zimborski, we've had him on the show as well, put together a list of the most irreplaceable players for Fangraphs. And, you know, it's who you expect. It's Mike Trout and Garrett Cole and Alex Bergman and Jacob DeGrom. Louis Robert is the guy that he has there. He says that Louis Robert, they have a 69.2% chance of making the postseason with him, and it drops to 46% without him. So I don't know that Louis Robert isn't your MVP, given the fact that you can play Andrew Vaughn in left field. I know Dustin wants him in trade. I don't know where he plays in the National League without the center fielder next to him. So, I guess Louis Robert would have to be an MVP conversation if he means that much, both defensively and at the plate for you. So I think there are other players that you need to talk about other than Michael Kopech as the early season MVP.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see. Louis Robert could end up being the most missed player on the White Sox, unfortunately. I love Michael Kopech, but to answer the question specifically and directly, it is, without a shadow of a doubt, the round mound of pound in Mercedes, okay? Your American League Rookie of the Month. He is the most valuable player. He is the most valuable player for the team residing at 35th and Shields. Again, the round mound of pound.
Put on a t-shirt.
Those are tough questions to answer because it's like, what do I say to that?
Before the Cubs rain out, Chris Bryant was penciled into the lineup at center field. Moving forward, given Ian Happ's struggles, could you see Bryant playing there every day if that means making room for another contact bat in the field like Nico Horner or Eric Sogard? How much is playing KB in the outfield enhancing his trade value?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think Chris Bryant talked about, and this is a few years ago, he talked about he's played center field before and he's most comfortable in the outfield spots in center field because everything's in front of you and he feels like that's a good spot for him. So I was fascinated by that. The only reason that he was penciled in at center field is because Ian Happ is out. I think Ian Happ is their center fielder. I think he won that job. I know he struggled this year, but hopefully he comes around. I don't think you want Chris Bryant in center field. I don't think you really want him in left field. I mean, he's fine in left field. He's fine. He can play center field. But I think he's a third baseman, and that's the position that he wants to play. If he keeps hitting like he's hitting, then he can play left field. I wouldn't have a problem with that. And I think that teams looking for an outfielder may jump in there. But I think the team that signs him, and again, I know Dustin wants, you know, a starting pitcher and a starting player. I know he wants a designated hitter in the National League for some reason. But I think that the reality is that there's only half a season of Chris Bryant left. And, you know, while that he could be the guy that pushes the team over the top, you just don't know what his trade value would be. And I think you're a little bit out over your skis, Dustin, if you think they're getting that kind of return for half a year of a guy who then hits free agency. And you know, obviously wants more money than the Cubs are willing to give him. So I think that comes into play when you talk about the value of a player as a guy that is just coming in for half a year. So I don't know that you're going to get near the kind of booty you think. Of course it helps him if he can have versatility. Of course it helps him if he can play different positions. But a team that goes after him will want one specific position. They won't want a guy that they could just move around all over the place.
And yet he can move all over the place. Boy, he has started. He started 13 times. Last night would have been the 13th start in the outfield this season. He's started 14 at third base. He is versatile, and I think that he, if the Cubs continue to fall off a cliff here and Chris Bryant continues to hit, he could be the most sought-after player during the trade deadline just because of the kind of year that he's putting together, even as a rental. So I don't know if that's asking too much, because I do wonder if the bidding war will commence and then there'll be teams really motivated to want to go out and get a guy who could be a big difference in a pennant race for a contender. It doesn't look like the Cubs are going to be that contender. I like the idea of him in center field. I love the fact that he is somebody who just shows up and he plays wherever they ask him. There's not a lot of drama surrounding Chris Bryant and where he's going to bat in the lineup and where he's going to play in the field. He never has been one to worry too much about that, and I think that's been one of the good things about having him around. You know, if it means benching Ian Happ at times, Ian Happ's hitting 167. It's May 4th. May the 4th be with you. But I think that when you're hitting 167, all bets are off. So all possibilities exist. If that makes the Cubs better by getting Sogard or Nico in the lineup for good, then I think they should consider any and all possibilities, because they aren't hitting. Well, they did the other day, but they haven't consistently hit. So whatever options it takes.
Out over my skis is a typical theme of mine on a daily basis, just to get that out of the way. Listen, if you want Chris Bryant, you're going to have to pay for him. He's having a MVP-type season on a team that's not doing very good. We referenced that yesterday, a la Hawk, not Harrelson, but the old Hawk that used to patrol right field for the Cubs and gun guys down. Wow, what an arm that guy had. And I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with David on this one. I don't think the Bryants like Chris playing all over the place. I think the Bryants like Chris at third base and batting third. That's what I think the Bryants like. Now, notice that I'm saying Bryants, not necessarily just Chris. But
really,
the Bryant,
I didn't notice that, Dustin. You're very subtle.
Okay. Okay. Subtle also, something subtle and out over my skis. We're just adding to the list here.
So what do the Bryants want then, Dustin?
I can't, Molly saying something, I can't hear him.
I gotta tell you this. If you trade Chris Bryant, you're trading him for prospects. The team that's gonna give you the most for Chris Bryant is the team that thinks it's going to win in the right now and he's going to put him over the top. You don't give up starting players and starting pitching to get a guy. You give up prospects to get a guy. And if you want to say a couple blue chip prospects, I got no problem with that. But the idea of actually cherry picking a team's roster and thinking, oh, we're going to give up these two contributors in order to get a guy who will contribute more, doesn't make the team better in the way they want to. So when you're talking about rental players, you're looking at prospects.
I think Nico Horner has earned the right to play more times than not moving forward. And just as far as like my proposed Cease Vaughn, I mean, Vaughn's really not playing enough for the Sox right this moment. And he could eventually be the replacement for Anthony Rizzo over at first base. And I think the National League eventually will have a Cease is not going to be in your AL championship/World Series rotation. You don't need that many guys. So that's where I'm going with that, and I'm trying to have some fun as well. But Chris Bryant, I hope he sticks around. He does make it look very easy and effortless, but we'll see which lane the Cubs are going to pick.
That's a lot of questions.
Did the Cubs' rainout last night feel like a stay of execution? Did it feel like the governor signed an order to postpone? Will the Cubs win one of the 2 7-inning games today?
That's a grimly worded question. Somebody's mind was on executions and pain and really dark day on Monday. Look, the team that needed the break yesterday from the news cycle that was at Wrigley Field was the Dodgers. The Dodgers lost Dustin May to Tommy John surgery. That was a tough one to take. And here they are, suddenly the beginning of May, the team that can afford anything, they need a pitcher. And so they needed the day to kind of regroup. Tonight, we'll find out what the professor has in store. Trevor Bauer also slated the pitch today later at Wrigley Field. That's going to be a lot of fun. It might be Alzolay. They haven't made that official yet. I think right now it's TBD. It's always the dangerous TBD. We'll find out maybe from Tommy Hanavy at 8 o'clock what the Cubs have up their sleeve. It's the Dodgers. I think your expectations should be adjusted, especially after you lost a slugfest to the Reds. Your starting pitchers haven't thrown a pitch in the seventh inning yet this season. And, you know, by the way, your bullpen, well, okay. I think that Pedro Strop decided to go on vacation. Did anybody notice that he was actually gone until they checked his Instagram account? This is a team in the midst of a mess. And so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it felt like they got a little bit of a reprieve, even if it was the Dodgers that needed the day to recover.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, this is dark, dark, dark stuff. I don't think there was a stay of execution. I don't know where that would come from, although it is the anniversary of the execution of Jesse Tefero in Florida. It took 13 minutes in the electric chair. I think his head caught fire at one point. Horrible anniversary to bring up. I don't know why you guys are so obsessed with these things.
What?
I honestly think it's just awful that that you take that attitude. I think the Cubs can win one of these games. I think you're more likely to win one of two of a doubleheader. I don't know if that's changed with the seven-inning games. Does it make it easier for pitching in seven-inning games? I've seen the White Sox win a couple doubleheaders that were seven innings each. So traditionally, two games, very difficult to kind of be able to win them one after the other. So maybe this is a little bit of a boost for the Cubs against the artful Dodgers. So we'll hope that that they can manage to do so. And I don't think the governor was involved, although he's probably a Cub fan. Everyone else seems to be.
I see a split in the Cubs' future. I don't think it's a bad thing at this point in the season to have a rain out, a weather out, if you will. They used lots of pitchers in that series against the Reds. Lots and lots and lots of pitchers through lots and lots and lots of pitches. And I think it's big because you've got Hendricks and you've got Arrieta going in the next over the course of the next 2 days against, on paper, the best team in the National League. So test yourself. This is when you want to rise up. You want to rise up to a level. And is this the Jock Peterson revenge game? So Jock is back supposedly from South Bend. And how many at-bats will Jock Peterson have in these three games? And will he get revenge on the Dodgers who didn't think it was worth keeping him around and playing him every day in left field out at Chavez Ravine?
You are aware what he's hitting, right? So I just...
Is it worse than what Ian Happ's hitting?
It probably is, actually.
I know you
actually
brought up like 167 for Happ. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, Jock still has that world championship wrestling belt from spring training when he was just mashing the ball. And I even at one point thought, ooh, maybe I'm okay with Kyle Schwarber over with the Nationals. Whoops. How did that work out?
Yeah.
League. That's how it worked out.
137.
Cactus League champion.
137, he said.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
What, if anything, caught you by surprise about the Bears cutting Charles Leno Jr.? Does that answer the question about whether the Bears believe Tevin Jenkins can play left tackle? Without a player who has lined up at left tackle on the roster, will the Bears sign a veteran, add a blocking tight end, or simply take their chances?
You know, I thought that Charles Leno was in trouble. I really did. And I thought when they took a tackle that kind of sealed it. You know, when you put together a list in the offseason of the guys that could be cut, Kyle Fuller was on it, Charles Leno Jr. was on it, Buster Skrine was on it. I don't know that that we expected to see Anthony Miller and Javon Wims back with this team. I guess the cap savings, not so much, but Bobby Massey was on it. I thought they would be one of the two tackles. I didn't think both guys would be gone, but you know, definitely there are still some players that they can get minor cap savings from that they don't seem too committed to. So it was just a lot of money. It was a ton of money, and that's the problem with Kyle Fuller. It was just a ton of money, and you figured that was going to come into play. You know, they didn't really do anything to replace Akeem Hicks. But he was another guy that maybe was atop that list because of the money involved, you know, the cap savings of whatever, $10.5 million that you could get from that move. I don't think that's coming. I think perhaps they have enough money now. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, because I think that they're in order to replace this guy, they probably need to sign one of the left tackles that's on the market. It's just somebody that has played the position. They probably also need a blocking tight end. You know, they probably need help to cover themselves. So that's money that's coming out of the – now, a blocking tight end's not going to cost you a fortune, but I'm just saying that, you know, all of a sudden that money goes pretty quick, man, when you start looking at what they need.
Yeah, I think they're talking about if they pay out of the savings, the rookie pool, they'll be able to pay the rookies. That's good. They'll be able to pay the rent or the electricity and utilities at House Hall. That's good. Landscaping costs will be covered. And Charles Leno will also likely help you pay for a veteran contract, maybe a couple veteran minimums, maybe the left tackle. You're right, maybe a blocking tight end, maybe another defensive back. We'll see. But the writing was on the wall. You knew as soon as you heard from Tevin Jenkins on Friday night about how he had been working at left tackle and the light bulb went on. Ryan Pace was asked about the possibility. I think it was, you know, Saturday, perhaps in the future of Charles Leno. And he said, let me tell you about Joey Lane, our cap guy. You know, so you understood that this was going to be a direction they could go just because of how vague it was left after the weekend. So you move up 13 spots to get a tackle. If you get your left tackle out of this draft and your quarterback, that's a good draft. That's a very good draft. So Charles Leno Jr. was a very good Chicago Bear for a lot of years, did a lot in the community. He will be missed in that regard, but it was time to move on. He was not playing at a high level, and you're trying to upgrade your offense. So I get where they're going. They're a little bit thin at that position in terms of experience. You never want that. But it feels like their offensive line has been upgraded in terms of overall talent and possibility. So that's a good thing as you sit here on May the 4th.
Leno Jr. is a good story, and David pointed out what he did off the field was good, maybe better than what he actually did on the field. But I think he did the most of what he could as a seventh-round draft pick. Typically, your starting left tackles don't come in the seventh round. It's got to work out. This guy has to start. Tom Thayer said it to you guys yesterday, I believe. He said that this guy has to start. You traded up for him in the second round. He was projected as a first round. I mean, Mully, when we did our thing about who do you think the Bears are going to take at 20, when we didn't think they would be moving up, that was Mully's guy. And then the Bears moved up and they got their guy. So I love hearing Jenkins talk, but now it's time to walk. The talking time is done. Now he's got to be able to kick that foot, and he's got to be able to get his hands underneath somebody's shoulder pads, and he's got to move those feet. So we will see. Here's what I don't want to see. I don't want to see guys blowing by him, and all of a sudden the talk is going to be, and I'll be the first one to do it, that it's time to move Cody Whitehair out to left tackle because you've got kind of this vineyard of centers and guards. You've got a bunch of guys that could potentially play that position. And I don't want the guy off the scrap heap that's penciled in as the right tackle right now. I don't want him on the left side. All he does is hold for a living. So, no, this guy has to do it, and he's got to do it from day number one.
Yeah, it's a big ask. You know, Tom Thayer said that he'd like to see him put his hand on the ground, like to see him in that stance before you make a move like that. But there's little choice, so there you go. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.